I've been fighting for Britney's justice for the last, this is 15 years. She would have been 32 this year. It's been 15 years since her death, and I've been fighting for her justice. I've registered her through missing and murdered because of how the police handled the situation and how they put her as a suicide when it's not. As a mother, I know Britney did not do what they claim her to do. I think there's more into her death, and we live on a reservation. So Britney, this community don't say, they don't talk. Even the last people that she was with that night, that morning, or that morning of New Year's Day before her passing, those people don't want to talk. They don't want to, because they're the last people that were with her in that vehicle. And I truly believe they, I think they have something to do with it, but they all made her look like she killed herself, saying that Britney was suicidal. Britney said she's going to kill herself. So they put that, they used that. They still don't, they're still not talking. But as long as I'm alive, I will be fighting for Britney's justice. Hopefully I would give her justice. I need closure as a parent.
These are the heartbreaking words of a grieving mother who is left with far more questions than answers. Today we are joined by Geraldine Bearspaw, mother of Brittany Bearspaw. Brittany Bearspaw of the Stoney Nakoda Nation in Morley, Alberta, was born on September 30th, 1989. By the tender age of 16, Brittany, who was also affectionately known as Britt, was living with her mother, Geraldine Buffy Bearspaw, her stepfather John, and her five siblings, a sister, Tiffany, and four brothers, Tyson, Tristan, Jacob, and Jesse, the latter of whom was adopted from Brandon, Manitoba. The family resided in Morley, located west of Calgary. Those who knew Brittany the best described her as being an intelligent, shy, and sweet teen with a great sense of humour, a big heart, and an outgoing personality. She was very proud of her native heritage and loved the powwow trail and listening to her favourite powwow music from the Northern Cree Singers and Whitefish Juniors. Attending powwows and visiting her extended family in Morley and in Siksika was something she loved, as was the likes of Vietnamese food. She was a good friend and was always kind to those around her. Brittany was adored by her siblings, and she herself would have done anything for them.
Brittany was an amazing little, talented, smart, humble, just her laugh. That's who Brittany was.
By 2005, 16-year-old Brittany was in grade 11 at Morley Community School, and according to those who loved her the most, Brittany thrived in her academic studies and had dreams to become a lawyer when she left school. She was very dedicated to her education and had many plans for the future, looking to become successful in her chosen career and wanting to live her life to the fullest. On New Year's Day, January 1st, 2006, between 7 and 8 a.m., Brittany Bearspaw decided, for unknown reasons, to cross the Trans-Canada Highway, walking across the westbound lane near to the Morley turnoff on exit 131, less than 10 minutes from her home. In the previous 9 years, 5 Morley residents had been killed on that particular part of the highway, including Brittany's own cousin, Oliver Rollin Mudd.
That highway, people hitchhike on the highway. Numerous people got killed on that highway, including my cousin, my nephew, and my mom got killed on that highway when I was 10 years old. So I don't know the story on my mom, but she got killed on that highway too.
On that fateful New Year's Day, reports were called into police at around 7:20 a.m. claiming that a person was walking in traffic near to the Morley exit, and when an officer arrived 15 minutes later, he spoke with a man who pulled him over to the side. The man had been directing traffic away from the body, which lay on the road, in order to prevent further injury to the deceased. Following the collision, nobody seemed to stop their cars to help her. It was Brittany Bearspaw.
So the next morning, New Year's Day, my daughter Tiffany called and says, "Mom, Brittany's not home, and there's a person that got killed on the highway, but they said it was a man." And for some strange reason in my heart, I just knew that was Brittany, even though I didn't know that was Brittany. A mother's instincts, they know things.
Brittany was, according to the medical examiner, struck by a vehicle at least 3 times, killing her instantly. Police were subsequently dispatched to the scene to investigate and began their inquiries. According to the CBC News profile on Brittany's case and the Calgary Herald newspaper, the second and third drivers who struck Brittany both turned themselves into authorities just days later and were not charged, although whoever fatally struck the teen initially has never come forward. According to reports, at least one of the drivers, if not both, who turned themselves in, believed they had struck a deer. At the time of her death, Brittany's mother, Geraldine, also known as Buffy, and her stepfather were in Winnipeg. And after they discovered that their daughter was missing and that a body had been found on the highway near Morley, they rushed home, only to find heavy police presence outside of their residence.
We only went to Winnipeg to pick up the Christmas gifts from the grandparents. That was the reason why we went to Winnipeg. And Brittany chose to stay back because she was not feeling right. She was feeling sick. So she had a fever that night. And I gave her some Tylenols and all that before we left. And so her younger sister decided to stay back with her. And as we're heading out, I told my husband, "Let's not go. I don't feel like going." But he said we have to go pick up their gifts and come right back. It won't be gone long. So then we went. Brittany and Tiffany stayed back, and I had Brittany's 3 younger brothers with us. So Brittany, on New Year's Eve, I specifically told her to go have New Year's dinner at my cousin's house at midnight. That's where you guys are going to spend your New Year's while I'm gone. So to this day, it took me 14 years. I don't go eat at my cousin's house because there's a lot of memories of Brittany, of her last time being there. So every New Year, I don't go to my cousin's house to have New Year's dinner. I avoid New Year's. New Year's has always been tough for us, tough for me especially. Christmas is more harder, but New Year's the worst. New Year's Eve is the worst day for me every year. It's the most toughest day. Brittany and Tiffany went and ate at my cousin's house. And my understanding is they told me that Brittany was having fun. She was playing with all the other kids, and her cell phone kept ringing, but she kept ignoring it. She just looks at it, puts it down, and she'll ignore it, and she won't answer her phone. I guess that's when her cousin was trying to get through to her. And so Brittany's been ignoring those calls. And all of a sudden, after midnight, Brittany's cousin shows up at my cousin's home. And that's when they told her that they'll take him back home. One of my cousins thought that it was one of our family members that were taking them home, but because we have a family member named Todd, and she thought that's who was driving them home. She didn't know it was those other 2 guys that went around collecting 14, 15, 16-year-olds that night and drove them to a liquor store in Kenmore and took them to a party. if they had known that it wasn't who it was supposed to bring them home, my cousin would have never let my daughter go that night. So they brought home Brittany and Tiffany, and Tiffany tried to hide in the vehicle, is what she said, but they, Brittany's cousin took her out and told her she can't go because she's too young. So the men and Brittany drove away. When they drove away, Tiffany, my daughter, called me, and so I tried to call Brittany. I left a voicemail on her phone telling her to get her ass back home because she knew she wasn't supposed to go anywhere. She didn't answer my calls. I just wish she answered my call.
According to CBC Indigenous, the RCMP initially believed that Brittany had committed suicide after the medical examiner had allegedly mentioned to them that Brittany had a, quote, previous history of ethanol abuse and, quote, made several references to self-harm shortly before she was last seen alive, with her friends who had seen her in the hours prior to her death allegedly also telling the RCMP that Brittany was suicidal. Her devastated parents, however, did not believe this to be the case, as Brittany did not drink alcohol, and according to them, Brittany did not have any drugs in her system when she passed away. They believed it to be a deliberate hit and run. Brittany had even called her mother the night prior to her death, asking to attend a dance the following day. Why would she have made plans and asked for permission from her mother if she intended to take her own life?
New Year's Eve, Brittany called me about three times. Her last call was probably her last call that she called me and asked me what I was doing. And I told her I was just thinking about her and my grandma that passed away a couple months before and that I was lonely. And then she asked me if she can go to the round dance New Year's Day. She asked me for permission to go to the round dance, and I told her she could. And so Brittany, or if they're saying that she's committed suicide, why would my own daughter ask me for permission to go for a round dance on New Year's Day?
A number of Brittany's personal belongings, including her cell phone, were taken in as evidence by the RCMP, but after a year of no leads, the family asked for Brittany's phone to be returned to them, as it contained precious photos and recordings of her. They called the RCMP, who told the family that the phone was in a safety deposit box, which belonged to one of the investigators who were on vacation, and they had to wait for them to return before retrieving it. After a further few weeks of silence, Brittany's stepfather called the RCMP again. However, this time, they claimed that the phone had been lost. Shockingly, according to Brittany's stepfather John Cedo, the RCMP offered to replace the phone if they showed them the receipt for it. This left the family understandably angry and upset. They couldn't understand how a potentially critical piece of evidence could be lost in a secure box in a secure building. This seemed very odd and left the family wondering what other evidence could have been potentially lost. Police made an appeal to the public in 2009 with the help of Crime Stoppers, who made a reenactment of the events leading up to Brittany's death, but unfortunately, no significant leads were established. In April of 2019, the RCMP decided to review the case, something they do regularly with cold cases, and in doing so, appealed to the public regarding two vehicles of interest: a red 1996 to 2000 Toyota RAV4 and a black 1999 to 2005 Pontiac Grand Am. The Cochrane RCMP stated that both vehicles likely had significant front-end damage at the time of Brittany's death. This appeal was welcomed by Bearspaw's family, who were hopeful that something would come from the renewed appeal. They also welcomed the fact that the RCMP were now looking at the case as a homicide rather than a suicide. The Bearspaw family and the police are still hoping that anyone who has any information on the two vehicles in question will eventually come forward, or any witnesses who travelled by the scene on the morning of New Year's Day of 2006. The RCMP and Bearspaw's family urge anyone who remembers even the smallest of details to come forward, as it could be significant enough to help solve this case. On September 30th, 2019, members of Bearspaw's family, as well as members of the Siksika and Stony Nakoda First Nations, gathered to remember Brittany on what would have been her 30th birthday at the site where she was killed. Over the years, the family placed memorials for Brittany at the side of the highway. However, several were shockingly left vandalised. But this didn't deter Brittany's loved ones from replacing them.
Brittany's roadside memorial, the first one that was untouched for years, and it got vandalised. Like everything, her angel, everything was literally vandalized, and the cross went missing. So we told the RCMP, they took pictures, but nothing came out of it. And then so we put up another one on the roadside where she died, and that one got vandalized again. So whoever's been vandalizing her memorial probably knows something, and just maybe it bothers that person every time they see that cross on the side of the road. We put up a new one this past year, 2020. And that one's still up, thank you. Know that memorial is still standing. Every New Year's, I used to spill pink paint on the highway every year. But I stopped doing that after people were vandalizing her memorial.
Brittany's stepfather, John Sado, told Best World News in regards to the heartless vandalism, quote, "We are going to put up another memorial cross whether they like it or not. We are not going to let these people put us and Brittany down." Despite the RCMP receiving some tips following their 2019 appeal, Brittany Bearspaw's death remains unsolved, and those involved in her death have never been brought to justice. Despite the years that have passed, Brittany's family are still struggling to come to terms with their tragic loss. In a plea letter released to the public, Geraldine Bearspaw described her harrowing grief, quote, "I am living a mother's worst nightmare, losing your child, especially your firstborn. This is the hardest thing I have to go through day in and day out for the rest of my life. Most people don't understand the meaning of grief, how grieving takes over you when you lose your own child. Every day I miss my daughter. She was not just a person. She was my girl, my baby. She was special, my world, my joy. She was my daughter." Geraldine went on to say, quote, "Brittany's last words to me on the phone were, 'Mum, I love you, and I'll see you later.' This is the last conversation I had with her. I can still hear her say those words. She's not just another Indian girl," Geraldine stated. "She was a girl with dreams."
And the RCMP didn't do a proper investigation. I wanted a I wanted a media release of what happened that morning, but they didn't want to do that. I didn't even get victim services for the last 15 years. I just had to suffer on my own all these years. And finally, just last year, Brittany's case got reopened again. And all these years I have suffered because I had to deal with this on my own with her death. I have suffered through alcohol, depression. I've tried to attempt suicide 3 times on my own, but I couldn't do it. If I can't do it, I don't think Brittany could do something like that. When Brittany first got killed and the media went nuts, a lot of rude comments were made. There were comments where people were saying, why is this parent let her 16-year-old go out and party and now she's crying about it? Trust me, I didn't tell her, go and party, Brittany, go. Because she was only 16. And as a parent, I'm not going to let my 16-year-old go and party. It was just her choice of friends. Friends that had bad influences on her. We tried so hard to protect her. But obviously we didn't protect her enough because she's not here.
The Bear's Paw family and Brittany's extended family from Nakoda Nation and Siksika Nation will not give up fighting for justice for Brittany, whose life was cruelly stolen from this world at the age of 16. Though hope has faded over the years, her family still want answers and, more importantly, closure, so that they can finally find peace and move on with their lives. Geraldine Bearspaw spoke to us regarding her daughter's everlasting legacy, pedestrian signs being put up along the Trans-Canada Highway in order to prevent further tragedy.
One of Brittany's uncles on her father's side fought to the government and they put up pedestrian signs, watch for pedestrians, on all entries coming into the reserve. The government had put all those signs up on behalf of Brittany. So every time when you drive to every highway on this coming onto the reserve, that sign is up on behalf of Brittany. With Brittany's death, it has affected me so much. Every day I think about Brittany. There's never a day where I don't stop thinking about her. I wish she was here. I wish I can go back to 2005 before we drove off to Winnipeg. Change things. Maybe bring us with her, bring both of them with us if I can turn back time. But unfortunately, we cannot turn back time.
If you have any information regarding the death of Brittany Bearspaw, which you think could be useful to the authorities, you can contact the Cochrane RCMP detachment on 403-851-8000. Before we end today's episode, we at the Stolen Sisters podcast personally want to thank Geraldine Bearspaw for agreeing to talk to us about her daughter's death. Talking about such matters is never an easy subject, so we commend her bravery at talking so openly about Brittany's death and how it affected her life and how it still affects her to this day. So a personal thank you to Geraldine for doing that for us. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Stolen Sisters podcast. We will see you again very soon.